FM the Fork.
Those stories and more next on Digital Jam.
ZD Market Intelligence, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you tonight.
Internet World opened today in Chicago. IBM is pouring huge resources into its internet strategy.
We'll hear from the man leading Big Blue's web plans. John Patrick of IBM is next on FN's Digital Jam.
IBM is the biggest software company in the world, which is both an advantage when you talk about market share, but potentially a disadvantage when you think of change in terms of internet time.
Well, Big Blue is trying to maintain its software edge, but the web is posing all kinds of new challenges and some opportunities. For more on IBM's internet strategy, we turn to Chicago and John Patrick, the Vice President of Internet Technology for IBM. Mr. Patrick, thank you for being with us today.
Pleasure.
First of all, what's IBM's goal when it comes to its web strategy right now?
Well, our goal is pretty simple, actually. It's to help our customers become e-businesses. And e-business, in case you're wondering, is not just another name for e-commerce. E-commerce is click here to buy a bottle of salsa or click here to buy a book or a CD, whereas e-business is click here to initiate the supply chain, click here to start just-in-time inventory flow, click here to start the onboarding process for a new employee in a company, click here to start a virtual collaboration among a number of small companies to give them the power and effectiveness of a very large company. So we're set out to help our customers become electronic businesses, to enable them to extend their reach and improve their profitability.
John, does that mean that here, as elsewhere in the company, you're trying to focus on more services to add to the $27 billion IBM's already gaining from services?
Well, it's a little bit of everything. It's hardware, it's software, it's services, it's education, it's financing, it's consulting, it's networking. In a nutshell, it's really connecting the dots, tying all the pieces together and making it real for our customers.
So IBM is really going to be more of an integrator here and an advisor than real innovator.
Well, I would not separate them quite that way. We clearly will be an advisor and we will be an integrator. And I would say, in fact, that will differentiate us, our ability to put all the pieces together. But under the covers of that, there's a lot of very rich technology. As you know, I'm sure, we are a creator of a large number of patents in IBM, and we're really putting those into our products. In fact, a third of the patents that we were granted last year have already found their way into products at IBM, and that's around 1,600 patents.
Just as the internet blindsided Bill Gates and Microsoft, it sort of blindsided the Lotus Development Unit of IBM, and surely one of the big challenges was the webization, if I can use that word, of nodes. How's that going?
It's going very well. In fact, the implicit security that was built into Notes has turned out to be a terrific advantage. The Domino product line has become not only web-centric in its implementation, but has this tremendous strength of offering granular security to allow a view of information on the web that is appropriate only for the person or the customer or the client who is intended to see it. It's a great strength.
For IBM, this role as integrator, is it going to be as profitable a one as it would be if you were had some of the bigger applications out there other than Notes, which I acknowledge is a very large one?
Well, we really participate in the entire cycle. As I say, it's not just services, it's not just hardware, it's all the above. It's hardware, software, services, all the pieces that need to be put together. And we will participate broadly in that across the entire industry.
I want to ask you, there's an increasing and continuing controversy, of course, about to what extent stuff on the internet should be accessible if it's encrypted by government agencies. The latest suggestion endorsed by many companies, I've frankly forgotten whether IBM is one of the endorsees, is that there'd be a way to allow intelligence agencies to get into encrypted stuff if it was encrypted from the server point forward, but not from PCs. Does IBM have a position on all this?
Well, we see encryption as a great enabler of electronic commerce. We do recognize, of course, the legitimate needs of governments, and they certainly are not irrelevant in this particular area, but the overarching capability, the overarching value and importance of encryption is to enable electronic commerce, to enable people to be able to establish that they are who they say they are, and to enable businesses to establish that they are who they say they are. And I think as time goes on, we will begin collectively to see that this is a very powerful capability, much more so than is realized today. In fact, I look forward personally to the day when I can take my own medical records and put them on the internet, encrypted with my own public key, so that I know that no one will be able to control the access to that information but me. This is a powerful thought that I think will be important as the internet continues to unfold.
Mr. Patrick, thank you very much for joining us. Enjoy Internet World in Chicago.
Pleasure. Thank you.
You're watching Channel 11 in Chicago.
Is the age of commerce through the internet in the future, or is it here?
I think it's here.
Are you making money at this point?
No, not yet.
This is Chicago Tonight, Wednesday, July 15th, 1998.
Good evening, I'm John Calloway, and welcome to Chicago Tonight. The headlines on this week's Time magazine may be overstated, but they undeniably deal with one of the big business stories of our time. The headlines read, "Kiss your mall goodbye. Online shopping is faster, cheaper, and better." Inside, the actual story makes it clear that in some instances, online shopping is not necessarily faster, cheaper, and better. But it's here, and it's growing. Time magazine estimates that 16 million Americans will buy $6 billion worth of goods and services online this year, and that by the year 2002, 61 million of us will cough up $41 billion in cyber purchases. With the Internet World Summer 98 exposition going on this week at McCormick Place, we thought this would be a good time to catch up on the phenomenon of the exploding world of business and commerce on the Internet. And Chicago Tonight correspondent Rich Samuels begins our story some distance from the Internet.
Could the traditional marketplace become a thing of the past?
This is eaten like you've never had. You take and marinate a piece of chicken and put it on a barbecue grill.
Has Kenny Stover missed the boat because he markets his jalapeno barbecue sauce only in analog form?
Can I buy your stuff over the Internet?
No, you cannot.
Right here, we're featuring a sampler that's called $99 of Wine on the Wall. It's
perhaps the future belongs to Cindy Ainsworth, who sells fine wines via the World Wide Web.
We describe our market as the busy, wired professional, someone who values their time, and therefore values the convenience of shopping on the Internet, is not necessarily a wine expert, but does enjoy wine.
Anyone can enter any artist that they like and search for it.
Or maybe the future belongs to Brad Mell, who sells compact discs via the web.
Our market is anyone who likes to shop for music. Our market is anyone who's aged 18 to 80, people who like all kinds of music, and particularly for the music shopper who can't find what they're looking for in a traditional music store, because we have 250,000 products.
Or maybe the marketplace of the future is best exemplified by the folks at AutoBuyTel, who claim their website is the best way to purchase a new or used car.
A consumer logs onto the Internet, and they might, for example, go to a manufacturer's website first. And then they will come to us to actually fill out a purchase request. And in that request, they will indicate the make and the model and all of the information about the car. And that request is routed to an accredited AutoBuyTel dealer who contacts the customer in 24 hours.
The three you just heard from are here at McCormick Place for the Internet World Summer 98 Exposition. The exposition was a work in progress when we visited it. The entrepreneurs are also involved in works in progress, but they have great hopes for internet commerce in the future.
People are buying on the net like they never have before. We saw a huge explosion of e-commerce in the fourth quarter last year during the business season, which is about 40% of a typical retailer's business during the year. We're seeing a huge growth in the first quarter. CD Now added 135,000 new customers in the first quarter alone.
I think it's going to make, and it already is, making our lives a lot easier. It's more efficient. I think it gives consumers a lot of choice. It really puts control into the hands of the consumer, enables the consumer to be a lot more informed.
What is this going to do to the conventional retail industry?
I think it's a challenge for them to keep up. There are certainly advantages for the traditional retailer. There's certainly immediate gratification, which we can't quite deliver. But I think that competition is good. I think they'll have to figure out what value they add to the sales process.
Back at the farmer's market, meanwhile, some rapid-fire market research.
Excuse me, either of you guys ever purchased anything over the internet?
No.
Nope.
Oh, plenty of times.
What have you bought?
We bought bed clothing for my child. We bought books.
What kind of books?
Nature books, mostly.
Obviously, there is room for growth, but the industry claims that by the year 2000, some $54 billion worth of stuff will be sold over the internet. But who's getting rich right now?
Have you achieved profitability?
We have not yet, but we're operating towards profitability, and our revenues have tripled for the past 3 years in a row.
We have good sales, but we're not profitable.
We hope to make money. We're not making money yet, but we hope to make money.
Well, that's the key question. Will the day come when you will make money?
That is the key question. That's what we're all in business for.
For now, the traditional marketplace seems safe, but are you missing a market by not selling on the internet?
I don't think so.
Finally, will the day ever come when we buy sweet corn via the web? For Chicago Tonight, this is Rich Samuels.
And now joining us to discuss internet business and commerce are John Patrick, who is Vice President of Internet Technology at IBM, Eliza Sherman, who is President of CyberGirl Incorporated, a media and entertainment company creating online programming, virtual communities, and products for women, Don Crabb, University of Chicago computer scientist and syndicated computer columnist who appears locally in the Chicago Sun-Times, and Andy Parker, President and CEO of Mercantech Incorporated, the leading provider of electronic commerce software for retail businesses. And welcome all to Chicago Tonight. Mr. Patrick, if I came to you and said, well, I just saw Rich Samuels' introductory piece, and I noticed those people saying and acknowledging at the end that they weren't making any money yet, and I said to you that my business wasn't online yet, and should I really bother getting online, what would you tell me?
I'd say get online. That's where all the people are going to be. But the focus needs to be, what's your business strategy? And I think there's a tendency today to think about the technology and various internet issues, but the real issue, and by the way, we have lots of technology to offer to companies, so I'm not downplaying technology, but number one, you have to have a business strategy.
Now, what, for those of us who don't know what do you mean by a business
strategy?
Well,
you have to think through, what is your value proposition to your potential customer?
Business strategy, I understood. But what do you mean?
Well, a value can be a lower price. It can be a better selection. It can be more information to help you decide what products you want. It could be a comparative capability to comparison shop. It could be an auction for some people who like that. It could be a fulfillment model that allows you to set up a list of all the groceries you want to have, and by the way, ship them to me every 4 weeks. So there's a lot of different models of how people buy and what people's needs are that you have to respond to if you want to be successful.
And can you say, however, that most businesses probably should be online?
All businesses.
All businesses. Corn on the cob. That guy selling corn on the cob.
Absolutely.
www.corn.com.
Here's the question. Does he have a fax machine? Right. Pretty soon, a business without being on the internet is going to be like a business with no fax machine, or a business not on the internet.
I'd like to take another stab at his value proposition statement. In, you wouldn't go out and spend $200,000 or $300,000 setting up a brick-and-mortar store without really writing a business plan and understanding exactly who you're selling your product to and how you're going to sell it. You know, and so getting on the internet, you have to do exactly the same thing. You have to have a business plan. You have to understand who you're selling to and what your proposition is, why they're going to buy from you, right? And then the technology is all secondary.
And it overall is a learning process for yourself, learning about how your business is going to be enhanced by the internet. But it's also a learning process for your consumer. Where is your consumer at right now? How can you better educate your consumer to help ease them into reaching you and dealing with you on the internet? So there's a learning process involved with all of this. And you have to realize it's a two-way.
Do you have to spend a lot of time then for kind of polling your consumers to find out if indeed they're even online? What if you have maybe an older, what if your business is directed, say, to an older population and they're maybe not great numbers online?
That's one of the best markets. 20% of the users of the internet are over 50. Half
20% of the users of on commerce and business?
Of the internet.
Or of the internet, period.
Are over 50. Yeah. And half of them have made a purchase on the internet. Half.
This is by a study.
So if you find that your consumers are older, get in business.
Right.
Get going.
Absolutely. They have time.
Well, then
they have money.
Would it be fair to say then that there's no major demographic group that isn't on the internet?
Yeah, the demographics are rapidly conforming to the overall demographics. But the growth rates right now are actually faster in the older set, people over 50.
But Dr. Ray, what if I came to you and said, now just be as independent and objective as you can. I'm not online yet with my business. Should I? What would you tell? What are some of the things you
would
tell me?
It really depends on your business. I hate to make that simple statement, but it does. I think there are things that don't sell well yet on the web. The trouble is an awful lot of companies are terrified. If they don't have a web presence, they're going to lose out. If they don't build the infrastructure now, even though they're going to sink a lot of money into it before they see any profit, if they don't do that, they're going to lose out to the competition who's going to spend that infrastructure cost right now.
When you say some businesses don't belong on, might it not be fair to say that some businesses that maybe won't be hugely successful can probably do some business on the Internet?
Certainly.
And maybe even that's
an
valuable.
Informational site, if nothing else. Let's say you're a general contractor, for example. You're not going to sell your contracting services through the web, but having that informational site there might mean that someone who's looking for a contract in their area might go to that site, find you, and call you up.
Yeah. Or suppose you're selling fresh corn.
Now we're going to make that corn sell, aren't we?
Right. Now, the point, it's not that you're going to go on the Internet and enter your credit card number and order 7 years of corn and set up a FedEx delivery. But if you feel like having some fresh corn this afternoon, where do you go? So you go on the Internet, you do a search on fresh corn, and you find out there's a lovely farm 3 miles down the road. You take a ride and you go talk to that gentleman that was on Rich's intro.
Now, in the world of magazines, we hear things like, if you're going to start a new magazine, national magazine, expect to lose money, millions of dollars, for anywhere from 5 to 10 years. And even the greatest magazines in the world, when they started Sports Illustrated, et cetera, that they had that experience. Is there any rule of thumb that you can say to businesses, if you're going to start with your internet commerce, that you'd better expect X number of dollars to lose over X number of years?
Well, that depends on the site you're putting up, right? I mean, what we found, we've been in business since 1995, putting sites up on the Internet, specifically for electronic commerce. And what we find is that most of those sites, when they turn profitable, is about a 9 to 12-month window, where it takes them, you know, that time to get up on the net and get themselves out there before they're going to start seeing a profit. And, of course, that clearly depends on the product, right? If you're selling ice cream over the net, probably not going to sell a whole lot of that because of the delivery problem.
Exclusively online stores, or do they have the real world component?
They're a combination of both. They've got a real world
can
component.
Can you break down how many now are exclusively online as opposed to those companies which have, say, retail outlets and online?
I haven't heard any statistics.
I would say over the next few years we're going to see most new businesses be formed online. And in fact, I would expect we're going to see millions of new businesses, people at home taking a hobby that they've had for many years and turning it into a business.
Although keep in mind, if you're talking about supplying someone with a product, that still means you have to have that product someplace.
Right. And fulfillment, distribution,
somebody's going to have an 800 number too, because you don't want to cut people off from getting to whatever it is you're trying to sell. The web is a way to bring in more customers, not cut them off.
For example, Amazon Books, when you purchase Amazon Books, I was looking at their site today. You got all of those choices, but they don't have all those books in a warehouse out there. They have a lot of the new books on. But they're going then, once you make the order, then they go to somebody that does have it in a warehouse somewhere.
Right,
is that how that works?
But you really don't care as the consumer.
That's right.
All you care is finding the selection, getting comfortable with what you want to buy, click here to buy, and the book shows up in your mailbox. You don't care where it comes from. When you're talking about new businesses coming online specifically on the net, we've got a customer, The Barbecue Source, and it's run by a guy who's just getting ready to retire, and he's looking for some added income, and he couldn't afford to start a brick-and-mortar store, and he's very much into barbecue. And so he started a website on the net to sell barbecue equipment. He goes around the country to the cook-offs. You know, Naperville here just had a rib fest, and that's how he advertises his site. And his little site, selling barbecue equipment, pays for he and his wife to travel around their motorhome and go to all these cook-offs.
Now, that's one of the real arts of this thing, isn't it? Once you get the site, you got to let somebody know you have it.
That's exactly right.
Marketing the site. You know something about that.
Well, first of all,
the website is also part of your marketing strategy.
Right,
Having a website is part of that. But how are they going to find you? There are many different ways to market your site. The very first way is in the real world,
right. In
magazines, on television, on the radio, in any of the traditional advertising that you're already doing. Make sure your web address is on it. People tend to forget that that is really where most of the audience is. People are curious when they see your ad and they see a web address. They'll then go online, and now you've got a chance to get them.
That's why on television, the two most frequently heard words today in American television are .com.
Yes, right?
It's true.
Because everybody's aware of that and doing it. What are the most successful, if you had to list 8 or 10, what are the most successful online businesses?
Amazon.com,
yeah. Books.
From a profitability standpoint or a revenue?
Well, yeah.
You tell me. Let's start with revenue, and then we'll go to profits.
I mean, Amazon.com's clearly done a great job of branding themselves. I don't know what their revenues are. I don't believe they're profitable yet.
No.
And they have awakened Barnes & Noble and Borders and the others,
absolutely.
Right?
And
they've all come to play now.
Right, and they'll all come onto the net. If you're talking from, like, a Don and Barb, if you ask them if they're successful, if the barbecue source, they're going to say absolutely,
sure.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's letting them live the lifestyle that they want. And so is that a success story? Absolutely. Are they highly profitable? Probably not, right? They want their income to be almost nothing so that they don't screw up their Social Security.
Yeah. The most profitable sites so far have been the computer sites. People like Dell and Gateway have made a pile of money by selling things through the website because it's just-in-time delivery. They don't build these things until as soon as you place the web order. It sends in motion to the factory, build this computer. It goes out the door 2 days later. They have no inventory to tie up.
The computer business and the computer business is doing well.
Right. The advantage of the computer business is, you know, the people they sell to have computers, right? And so they're probably already on the
built
net.
In.
You know,
it's
Cisco.
Right.
It's a natural for us.
So we're talking books, CDs, wine,
computers,
flowers,
seafood,
computers. Computers.
You name it. Correct.
Now,
clothing.
We're
travel. Booking travel. Cars.
Subspecialties. I saw a reference to a golf site. That's probably pretty...
Very, very niche things. If you've got a bizarre, rare hobby of some kind, someone out there is selling exactly what you need for that hobby.
Now, there are also financial implications. I read a wonderful article in the New York Times about how people who are afflicted with rare diseases get on the Internet and really find things so much more quickly. They find probably a lot of bogus stuff, but there are financial there are business implications for that also.
I'll give you an example. We have a customer that sells coffee over the Internet. And they were selling coffee and got a phone call that said, you know, hey, I bought these three things of coffee from you, three different styles of coffee, but I'm blind. And I can't tell which coffee is which without having my neighbor come over. And that coffee manufacturer has now put the Braille labels on all their coffee bags. And they've got this huge following in the blind community that get on the net and actually buy on the net. Imagine going to the grocery store if you're blind.
Now, we've come at this, frankly, from a business perspective tonight as opposed to a consumer perspective, but I want to raise an issue that I assume joins consumer and the business person totally and sincerely, and that is the issue of security. Many of us as consumers say, well, the idea of starting to purchase on the Internet sounds very attractive, and I can see a million possibilities there, but I'm sorry, I hear all of these stories about hackers and people stealing your credit card numbers, and how do I know, etc. I assume that then those of you who want to help people get in business come at it very sincerely also. So what are the issues there?
Well, it's a very important issue, but I would say the most important aspect of it is not does it work, or is it strong enough, or can it protect my credit card number? The issues are really more policy-oriented for a business. How seriously do they take security?
Yes.
And who's in charge of security
for
the company? And do they have the policies and procedures to make sure that they audit it?
Now, do you raise that question with the knowledge that many companies don't take it seriously enough yet?
Oh, yes. One of our fastest-growing businesses is what we call our ethical hacking unit. Where we
ethical hacking unit.
We'll actually come break into your network for a fee under a contract. Most of the time, we get in. And then, of course, we'll show you how we did it and show you how to prevent it from happening in the future.
Now, when you do that, is that simply a stunt that IBM people can do because they're so good at this? Or is it the kind of thing that in the real world,
absolutely,
companies really ought to watch out for?
15-year-old kids can do it.
Right.
I mean, they're out there. It's a challenge for them. Now, whether or not they're really going to steal your credit card and use it on a continuing basis is another story. They're really looking for the challenge to show that they can do it. Ultimately, if they steal your credit card number, they may use it once or twice. You can dispute the charge, that's where you end up with a hassle, but really not something that is not secure, that's going to threaten.
Well, in addition to that, credit card fraud on the internet now is just a fraction as a percentage of what it is in the real world.
It's
very difficult, actually, to steal a credit card while it's in transit across the net.
It's jumbled up so someone cannot, if they decode it, they just get a jumble.
When you hear the stories of them breaking in and stealing your credit card, it's not during your transaction. No. It's breaking into the system of someone who has all of these credit card numbers stored, like an internet service provider has all of the credit card numbers of all their clients stored in one place.
Is the fact that there is so little fraud, credit card fraud, then, on internet commerce, should the people at IBM take note of that, and maybe one shouldn't invest, or is it because people have invested in security?
No, I think a lot of the software, the commerce software, for instance, that we provide and IBM provides, we don't leave credit cards in the clear on the servers. Right, and like he's talking, if you're going to go and steal cars, where do you go? You don't go when they're traveling down the freeway. You go to a parking lot.
Right. And so the servers are the
parking lot. So we're going to break into the parking lot. And we're going to steal the cars. Yes. Well, what IBM does, what Mercantech does, and the other internet service commerce providers is they encrypt all that data. So even if you break into the parking lot, you still can't steal the car.
Now let's go back to the business perspective for a minute. If you're in this business, the barbecue guy, et cetera. Do you have any particular problems in this environment as you start up, et cetera, collecting the monies that are due you?
Of course. You have to decide what venues you're going to accept. Are you going to accept e-cash, electronic cash? Are you going to accept credit cards? And are you going to pay the fees then for doing that? Visa, MasterCard, American Express, they're not free. They charge you vendor fee.
You pay a percentage,
That's right. And if you're a small business, I mean, that's a non-trivial amount of money you have to come up with every month.
But if you are using credit cards, and I assume, that's how you do the business on the internet, and so you are paying those fees.
Right.
But when you buy that service, do you buy then, in effect, the collection of that money? Is it not a big headache?
No, actually, it's not that bad. When you set up a credit card account with a bank, they're going to take a percentage of the transaction for ensuring that when you lose your credit card or get a credit card stolen, the bank can cover that charge. So you're kind of, that percentage goes to paying that, quote, insurance.
The money flows back to the small business in the same way it would if they took a plastic card and mailed it in.
So there's no great credit issue for those people.
Now, let's go
to another issue. Suppose you're starting your business on the internet, and you say to yourself, well, I'm already paying startup costs, and I'm already paying the credit card companies, et cetera. Am I going to have to pay the state of Illinois or Uncle Sam? What's the tax picture?
Sales tax.
Yes.
That's a huge issue. In fact, there's a bill right now in Congress, the Internet Tax Freedom Act. It's passed, I believe, the House now, right? It's on its way there. It's passed the Senate, and it's on its way to the House. And that basically puts a moratorium on tax changes for 2.5 to 3 years, I think it is. That's a good thing.
Stifle growth. That's what they're trying to do. Because the states all want to get their piece of the action.
Well, no, the states do want to get their piece of the action. And if you were sitting here with the governor of the state, et cetera, and you're trying to provide services for the people, you might say, well, if I charge 8% or 8.5% to when you buy at Marshall Fields, why shouldn't I charge the barbecue?
It's not Marshall Fields. Marshall Fields is now virtually on the network. They're every place. They're not just in Illinois. They're not just in Minnesota. They're every place.
Well, we go out of state frequently. I mean, one of the things, if you buy something in New York or California, they'll say, we can ship that back and there's no sales tax.
Which they should never say, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, they do.
No.
I'm saying, but they do. You hear that all the time.
Yes.
So is there, on the internet, is there should there be a difference between out of state, as it were, versus buying a Illinois product on the internet from Illinois?
Over time, it's going to be the same.
It's going to be the same.
Is it tax free now?
It depends where the product is shipping from.
If I do business in the state of Illinois, which I do, and if I sell a product to a merchant in the state of Illinois for his use, I have to collect sales tax.
Yes.
If I have an office in California, if we ship product into the state of California, we have to collect sales tax. If I ship product to New York, I don't collect sales tax because I don't have an office in New York. Right, so it's a point of presence type thing.
By the way, I may have mixed up my example. Not so much as when you're in New York and you buy. If you buy something in Illinois, will they tell you if you're going to ship it? Do they tell you sometimes you don't have to?
If I'm in Illinois and I ship it outside the state, I don't collect sales tax for Illinois.
That's what I've been hearing.
The way to think about this is the same as the catalog business is today. And there are some exceptions in the way it's implemented today, but that's the way it's going to be.
Now, the other question for people going into business is, let's say you've decided, we really have a great product, and it really will sell on the internet, and we really got to get going on this. do you then have a problem getting everybody in the building, as it were, on the same page? Do the computer systems match up to the distribution people or the graphics people? I mean, there's some stuff there, isn't there?
Well, yeah, the trick is to start slow, right? Get an internet set up that's running, that you can take the orders and either hand key back into your existing systems until that site starts to grow. And then as that site starts to grow, you know, IBM can tell you, use their integration services to start integrating into their back-end accounting, fulfillment, and everything else.
But Josh, start simple, grow fast.
Exactly right.
I'm sorry.
John's point about the business issues involved here, your business plan has to spell out how you're going to do this. It can't just be sort of ephemeral. It's got to really get down and dirty about exactly what you're providing, when you're going to provide it, how much you're going to put into that provision for doing it.
You know, along those lines, before the internet, before anybody ever heard of e-commerce, I saw the data. I think it was roughly 1,000 businesses every week that go bankrupt. It has nothing to do with the internet. Right. Why did they go bankrupt? Because they didn't have the right business plan, they didn't have real value, they didn't know how to manage their business, they picked the wrong market or the wrong product, or they had poor quality. Well, those same kinds of things are going to exist in cyberspace.
The internet, in fact, will expose that kind of stuff more readily.
Faster.
Because people can start a business for a lot less money on the net than they could if they have to do bricks and mortar.
On the other hand, would it be fair to say that if you start to go on the internet, maybe it'll be one of those occasions when you have to take stock of your business and your business plan. And maybe at that moment, you start to turn your business around. If you get a couple of those IBM people, you got Lisa in there, and now you start, we're going to do this right, maybe we better...
You figure out where your market really is.
It's a good chance to rethink. Exactly.
And Don, before we go, the other thing is this thing going to escalate once the whole business, some of us, struggle to get on the internet?
We've got to talk, John.
Yeah, no, but I'm talking about the machinery.
Yes,
etc.
Right.
And then one of these days we're going to get on like we switch from channel 2 to channel 5.
We have a bandwidth problem at both ends. We have a bandwidth problem with people connecting to the internet. It's not fast enough. The network itself is not fast enough. And at the other end, servers can't handle all the load. I mean, Amazon has been adding servers like it's going out of style to make up for the fact they didn't have enough to handle all the transactions.
I'd like to comment on that.
You will, but you'll do so over the credits because I see our time is up. Our many thanks to John Patrick, Elisa Sherman, Andy Parker, and Don Crabb for being with us this evening. And I hope you can be with us here again at 7 or 10 tomorrow evening. We'll take you along with a crew getting ready for this weekend's 100th anniversary of the 333-mile Lake Michigan sailing race from Chicago to Mackinac Island. I'm John Calloway. Thank you and good night.
Yeah, Don made a very good point about the backbone of the internet. This information highways are going to be able to keep growing to keep up with this demand that you pointed out at the beginning of the program. And tomorrow we're announcing at IBM a project with Northwestern right here in Chicago to do some advanced research.
But not the University of Chicago?
And the University of Chicago and the whole Midwest Regional Educational Network.
Yeah, that's a real issue, though, isn't it?
This is 11.